everyone, and welcome back to Who's There. I'm your host, Allison. If you're new here, thank you for joining us. This is a podcast where I talk to a new horror fan every week because I hope to destigmatize what it means to be a horror movie fan. Because most of us are just regular people who like the adrenaline rush of being scared for some reason, and here we delve into those reasons. I'm so excited because this week I am sharing a conversation that I had recently with the co-writer director of 1999's The Blair Witch Project, Eduardo Sanchez. He tells me how he didn't set out to make horror movies, but fell into it, when he started watching a lot of horror movies, and what the process of filming The Blair Witch Project was like, and so much more. It's such a good conversation, and I can't wait for you to listen to it. But one last thing before we get into this episode. If you love the show and haven't left us a review on iTunes yet, I'd be so grateful if you could take a second to rate and review it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and subscribe to our feed wherever you listen to us. Thank you to everyone who's already left us a review. It's so appreciated, as it really helps people to find us. I think that's it, so let's get into my conversation with Eduardo Sanchez. Hey, Ed, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you so much for making the time to be here. In case there are people out there who don't know who you are, can you tell everyone a little bit about yourself?
Yes, I'm a filmmaker. I started about 25 years ago with a movie called The Blair Witch Project. And that's the one that I really, like, the first time I had made real money. And then continued to be an indie filmmaker until it became very difficult to make a living. And I luckily got an opportunity to start doing television. And for about the last 10 years, I've been doing pretty much 100% television. And I love it. And, you know, it's been very good to me. And so, you know, I'm still, you know, always looking at features. There's supposed to be a couple of features that I'm doing like later this year and early next year. But again, the TV is really my bread and butter. And, you know, just trying to have as much fun with that as possible.
Amazing. Yeah, I hear TV is where the money is at. So
Yes.
So first things first, what's your favorite scary movie?
I have a bunch of them, but I think the scariest movie for me that like kind of affected me was The Exorcist. You know, I came from not a strict Catholic upbringing, but my mom was definitely very religious. And, you know, her whole thing was like, well, if you believe in Jesus, then you believe in Satan. So I've told this story a million times, but when I watched The Exorcist, it was almost like, you know, it was all the family gathered around the TV to watch The Exorcist. It was kind of like a, you know, like a warning for us to not mess with Satan. It was almost like a documentary. So that, you know, obviously really shaped me. And then I love horror movies, but I hate horror movies. Like I hate the really scary ones. But, you know, as a kid, I loved Jaws and The Shining and Amityville Horror. And then, you know, later on, you know, I like the Sixth Sense and The Ring. And I like kind of some more of the commercial stuff. I like a lot of the Blumhouse stuff. I really dug Paranormal Activity and Rec. And, you know, there's so many now. A24 is making such great horror films. So, I got a lot of favorites. But I think, you know, the ones that I really love were the ones that, you know, when I was little and like, you know, Amityville and, you know, again, The Exorcist, The Shining, The Changeling, which is not as a famous movie from that time, but really good haunted house movie. Yeah, that's kind of where I gravitate towards.
Awesome. Can you delve in a little bit deeper about how you first fell in love with the horror genre?
Well, you know, I mean, I fell in love with movies in general. My dad, you know, because I came from Cuba and I was really little when I got here, and my dad didn't speak English. He still doesn't speak any English. So but he loved movies, and he would take me to the movie theater, any movie theater there was a movie theater near us that had like, you know, Spanish subtitled or Spanish dubbed over movies. So I went a lot to the movies with him, movies that I probably shouldn't have seen, a lot of R-rated stuff. And so, but then, you know, the horror movies to me were always kind of a little difficult because, you know, so I loved like James Bond and I loved comedies. I loved the Pink Panther, you know, things that I could enjoy with my dad. And my dad did not like horror movies. So he rarely took me to horror movies. So I would see horror movies, you know, on television and stuff, but I kind of avoided them. So I didn't really fall in love with the horror genre until after Blair Witch. Yeah, because again, like I was not a horror filmmaker, you know, like Blair Witch. I mean, I've had, you know, horror movie ideas, but Blair Witch was probably the only one that really like stuck with me. Otherwise, you know, I was doing just, you know, writing a lot of other stuff, different things. And so, you know, it was surprising to us, to both me and Dan Myrick, the guy I did, you know, the film with, because neither of us were really horror guys, but we came up with this idea and we were like, this is the best idea we have, you know, to shoot so cheaply. So we went out and shot it. And now all of a sudden we were horror filmmakers. So I kind of had to go back and like really, you know, study the genre and like just catch up on everything. And also just get in the habit of watching, you know, horror movies. It's like, again, it's not something that I really enjoy. I don't like being scared, but I do recognize, you know, how special horror movies are. And I love the genre because like there's so much variety within the genre. You know, it's like the most, you know, it's the most diverse genre in film and television, you know. So you can do comedy, you can do, you know, action, you can do monster movies, psychological horror, you know, you can do all kinds of, you know, serious or kind of goofy movies and everything in between, you know, and it falls in the horror genre, you know. So it is like, I think it's probably the most experimental, you know, of the genres, which I always love because there always is this like expectation to try something new, you know, because you're trying to scare people. So yeah, it's always a challenge. And I've just learned to really respect the people that can, you know, that can do it well.
Why do you think the people who seem perfectly sane love the horror genre?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, you know, it's like, I feel that like horror gives you a way to kind of deal with a lot of the tension in your life, you know, and maybe, you know, obviously puts you in a situation or, you know, you're watching characters in uncomfortable situations and death and near death and, you know, all kinds of horrible things. So, you know, it's kind of like there is a certain level of like that same instinct where, you know, you rubberneck when you see an accident. Like there is something fascinating to us humans about like tragedy, you know, as long as it doesn't happen to us, you know. And I think horror movies give you that safe kind of buffer, but they do kind of, you know, if you let them, they, you know, they will scare you and kind of take you for the ride, but in a very safe way, you know, because you're in your home or you're in a, you know, mostly safe movie theater. You know, it's the same kind of fascination I think that people have with like, you know, haunted rides and, you know, haunted attractions or even like roller coasters that are really, you know, crazy and intense. And again, like I've never shared that desire. Like I avoid, you know, like I like roller coasters every once in a while, but they have to be very, you know, they can't be too crazy. And I don't really like haunted attractions. You know, that's not my idea of fun.
But
But there is something about, you know, like popping in a good horror movie and just kind of living precariously through the characters. And, you know, and I think it's something that like, you know, back in the day when we were all kind of huddled around the fire, living in caves or, you know, basically just, you know, hunters and gatherers, like, you know, there was kind of danger everywhere. You know what I mean? Like even just falling or like, you know, there was, you know, we were more susceptible, obviously, to wild animals and also attacks from other tribes. Like, you know, life was really rough back then. And I think that sense of danger that we all have of like, you know, when there's something that's comes from like, you know, our ancestors, you know what I mean? So, and I think now we have most of us luckily have, you know, pretty safe lives where, you know, you're probably not going to get killed. I mean, you know, obviously there's a lot of tragedy in the world and especially, you know, here there's shootings and it's crazy, but you know, chances are you're not going to get chased by a serial killer, you know what I mean? So, or, you know, wild animal or something. So I think that kind of brings back a little bit of that, you know, that feeling that we used to have back in the day, but I don't know why we crave it because, you know, it's not like it was a fun thing to do back then, you know, being chased by a grizzly or something. Yeah. It's kind of a weird thing. Like it is, you know, it's like a little bit of, you know, torturing yourself, you know, like, but having fun with it. It's very crazy. Crazy, I'd say.
Definitely agree. So you mentioned that you don't like being scared when you're watching movies. So what scares you in movies today?
Like just like off kilter stuff, just like unexpected things. Like I really love Hereditary and The Witch, you know, something where it's like, you know, you're taking, you know, you're getting, taking horror and kind of bringing from a different direction, whether it's a period piece or whether it's very stylized. And again, like, you know, I think horror films more than any other genre, like, really benefit from, like, you know, a vision, you know, some kind of visual language. And I think the best horror directors have that, you know, they can bring that kind of, you know, visual language and kind of keep you off on your toes, you know, keep you off balance by, you know, just the way they set up shots and the or scenes and the way they block and the editing and the music. But I like anything that, like, you know, is just unexpected, you know, and I don't like jump scares, but I do like, I mean, I don't like it, but it's very effective, like, just glimpses of something horrible that, you know, you can barely see, and or a sound, you know, sound is still, I think, the most effective tool in horror films. Yeah. You know, so that kind of stuff is what creeps me out. You know, I mean, it could be any, could be haunted house, could be monster movie, just something where, like, you know, like these kind of, you know, unexpected moments, quiet moments that turn into, like, just slowly turn into dread. I really like those kinds of films.
Yeah. And Hereditary is filled with so many of those quiet, dreadful moments.
Yeah. It's not a fun movie for me.
No. I don't think it's a fun movie for anyone, but I love it. You talked about this a little bit earlier, but what would you say is your favorite subgenre in horror?
My favorite subgenre is definitely the comedy, you know, like action, like Evil Dead 2 or, you know, Army of Darkness. Like Evil Dead 2, Evil Dead 1 was great, but Evil Dead 2, like, just having a little more budget and having, you know, almost like rebooting it. I think that it, you know, Sam Raimi just went nuts. Those guys went nuts. And, like, I had so much fun when I first watched that movie. So I really do like the kind of stuff that has, that kind of plays off the scares with, like, comedy. There's a friend of mine who did a movie called Juan of the Dead with, you know, Juan de los Muertos, which is a Cuban film. And it's, like, just funny. It's just really, like, you know, it takes place in, actually, in Cuba, and it's just so, you know, and, you know, smart and funny and, you know, touching. I like stuff like that. And I also like stuff that, like, you know, that has, like, a real emotional core, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you know, real characters or something happening to somebody. And what I don't like is, like, the torture stuff. Like, I feel like there's, you know, like, and that's why I've always kind of stayed away from the slasher movies. Like, you know, I mean, I've seen Halloween, I've seen some of the sequels and Friday the 13th, but I don't really, I definitely have seen less, you know, I have seen less of those movies than I've seen of, or anyway, I haven't seen many of those movies. So I, you know, and I, especially, and Saw, like, you know, we had to kind of, I mean, and Saw was really clever, you know, and still, like, they definitely did a good job of kind of mixing it up. But at the end of the day, like, I just don't like, you know, the idea of just, like, you know, torturing somebody for the sake of, you know, of, you know, torture, of showing somebody being tortured. It's just not fun. It's just, I don't know, just, it's not right for me. You know, I mean, I'm not that, you know, you don't want the audience to be uncomfortable, and even there, you know, there is a certain amount of pain or something that, you know, I mean, there are bad people in this world, obviously. And you're most horror movies are about, you know, bad situations, but there is, like, a level of, like, okay, now you're having, like, fun, you know, tearing this person apart. And it's not, you know, it's not that, you know, there's nothing fun about that. You know what I mean? It's just a little dark and sadistic, I feel, but, you know, it's like, most horror movies kind of walk that line, you know, pretty well, where they kind of, you know, tie you in and then, you know, show you this little bit of violence or blood. And I like that. I like the kind of, like, just being surprised by violence instead of just it being thrown in my face. Now, you know, with a certain style of horror movie, like, if it's more over the top, you know, kind of comedy or kind of a comic book kind of horror movie, you can get away with, like, crazy, you know, violence and stuff. But when a movie is, like, realistic and you're kind of, you know, going into these deep, you know, these deep kind of, you know, things of people being tied up and just, you know, pleading for their lives. And that to me is not fun. You know what I mean? So I usually stay away from films like that.
Yeah, that's understandable. I had stayed away from all of the Saw sequels until this weekend, because I told a friend that I would come on his podcast to talk about Saw 4. So mm-hmm. I watched three of them this weekend. I cover my eyes during most of the the torture porn scenes, but like the story behind it is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So,
No, I mean again, they did a really good job, and I think
yeah.
they kept kind of, reinventing Jigsaw. And but again, it's, it was about, when it comes down to it, that's what people remember, is people being stuck
Yeah.
in traps and having, limbs removed and just weird thing, But yeah, I agree. I mean, and, and to me, it's like, it's not that it means it's a bad film or it's like, badly made. I just think that, it's just not my, it's not my thing.
Yeah, not it's not going to be for everyone, especially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what, the great thing about horror is that, it's like there's so many variations on it that you're gonna find something there's always something you're gonna hate, but hopefully there's something you love right around the corner,
Yeah, I feel like everyone loves horror a little bit. They just, if they don't think they do, they just haven't found their in yet.
Yeah.
So,
Yep.
yeah. So, what is your favorite found footage horror movie that isn't the Blair Witch Project, if you have one?
I think the, I mean, I like a lot of them. Like I love The Wreck, and I like the first Paranormal Activity, and not to say anything bad about the other Paranormal Activities, but I just, again, like I don't have fun watching those movies, like there's a, like the first one really freaked me out. But so kind of one of these, like the movies that freak me out, I watch once and that's it. I've been freaked out enough. But I loved, Cloverfield, I think, is really cool. I
I
love,
love
the idea,
Cloverfield.
yeah, like the idea that, like, you can, because when Blair Witch came out, there was a lot of found footage movies, but nothing really hit. And I feel that, like, Cloverfield was like, the J.J. Abrams stamp of approval. And the kind of the Hollywoodization of found footage, where like, hey, if JJ can do it, why, can't you? Why can't everybody else? And then that's when like Paranormal Activity got a chance, and a lot of the other ones you started hearing about. And so I appreciate that it kind of like, brought it into the mainstream. And then there's all kinds, like I love, there's this movie called The Europa Report, which is like, like found science fiction found footage, and it just like, it's just smart. It's just like, I like stuff that takes the genre, that, or the style, the subgenre, in a different direction. You know what I mean? But still kind of like keeps the basics, the basic rules, mostly intact. I thought that one was really smart. And I like the VHS movies are a trip. So yeah, it's, I mean, honestly, like I like more found footage movies than I hate, so it really, I have a soft spot for found footage movies, so they, and sometimes I just watch like the most terrible, the worst ones I can find on Netflix or Prime or something, just kind of something that I've never heard before. 'Cause, just like, I don't know, I just like seeing it, 'cause there's, even in a bad film, there's always something that's kind of
Yeah.
interesting. And I just feel like I always like going down that path of like, okay, how did this end up happening? You know what I mean? But yeah, I know that there was a lot of backlash, of, people hating found footage and being sick of it. And I think there was kind of an, we were overdosing a little bit on it, but I still think it's a great genre. It's a great, still a lot of things to be done, discovered in that subgenre.
Oh, I definitely agree. Yeah, it's one of my favorite subgenres. Have you, since you're always looking for found footage horror movies or found footage movies that you haven't seen before, have you checked out Butterfly Kisses?
Yes. That one was, it was actually done by a filmmaker near that I lived here close to me. And I was involved in some of that movie. I was trying to be kind of an executive producer without being an executive producer on it, but I think it's really good. I think Eric did a great job. And
Yeah.
it's kind of one of those things, because that was weird, because like, I initially tried to talk him out of it. Like I did everything I could, because I was like, I didn't quite get what he was trying to do, but I'm glad he stuck to his guns and made a pretty good found footage movie that makes a lot of people, I hear that one a lot. People bring that one up a lot, so it's
Oh,
cool.
really? I never hear anyone talk about it, and I just found it whilst like searching on Prime one day. So I'm glad people know about it.
Yeah. No, it's. I mean, it comes up a lot of times. It's a weird film. I mean, it didn't do, it didn't do crazy business, but I'm glad that people are discovering it.
Yeah. Who would you say are your favorite horror directors nowadays?
I like Ari Aster, and I think you know, the idea of like taking horror and, you know, setting it in a, you know, doing period piece horror movies, I think is really interesting. It's kind of like what we wanted to do with the movies after Blair Witch. If we had our way with the franchise, we wanted to kind of go back and do these period pieces from the different, you know, play different times in the mythology, different stories in the mythology. And I just thought that like the closest kind of cousin to the movies that I had in my head, I think that we talked about back in the day, are the, you know, the first two Ari Aster movies. But I like, there's a lot of really great filmmakers out there. Who's the guy that I'm like blanking on names. Mike Flanagan, I think is really talented. I've been trying to get, you know, do something with him for a long time. And, but, you know, there's a lot of really great filmmakers out there. Who's the guy? Robert Eggers is really great. Actually, he's the one that did Witch. And yeah. I always get those confused because they like, to me, they're like almost like brothers. And I know they have nothing to do with each other, but I found each of their films like so fascinating, you know? So I always mess those up. But yeah, Ari and Robert, and I think, you know, and even, you know, like I'm hoping that John Carpenter comes out of retirement and makes a movie, you know, before too late. I like that it's like, you know, the success of horror continues. And I think that there's like a lot of really great talent out there coming out. And now like just the whole idea that, you know, you can use your freaking cell phone to, you know, make movies. I think there's just a lot of interesting stuff out there. Obviously, there's a lot of stuff that you have to kind of, you know, make your way through to find the good stuff. But I'm just really happy that like a lot of different kinds of people are out there making movies, all kinds of movies, and especially horror movies.
Definitely. How different do you think your experience making the Blair Witch Project would have been if you had cell phones, like iPhones?
Wow. I mean, we actually did have cell phones because it was, but it was, you know, those the still the days of the flip phones. Yeah. And where we shot the movie, which was like a park in Maryland, like there was no cell service in that park, because I remember that. So it was pretty much, you know, there was pretty much no cell phones, you know. But since the movie took place in 1994, you know, there's very few cell phones. So we kind of were, you know, like I always, every time I, you know, talk film or talk, you know, workshop a horror script, it's like, we got to figure out like, what do you do with the cell phones? You know, how do you get rid of cell phones? So for Blair Witch, you know, early on, we just had to figure out how to get rid of the cell phones. And I think that you know, the way you do it is that they just run out of batteries and, you know, you don't have any way of charging them, and that's the end of it. But yeah, it would have definitely added a lot. You know, it definitely added some beats, but also I think we could have gotten some footage from the phones. Like maybe the phones would have been, you know, been the cameras instead of the Hi-8 camera. So, you know, it like, you know, there's always like something that you got to kind of work around to try to get rid of the cell phones and try to get rid of the communication. But a lot of times, you know, you can use it to your advantage and you actually use it as a tool.
Yeah, definitely. Instead of Mike throwing the map in the stream, you could have thrown the iPhones.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I mean, a little bit of a different scene, but yeah, it would have just been updated, you know. So yeah.
Yeah, that would have been interesting. So you are the co-writer and director of one of the most impactful horror movies of our generation, 1999's The Blair Witch Project. Had you and the other Hacks and Five seen the few and far between existing found footage movies that existed before you started fleshing out the idea for Blair Witch, before you decided to use the found footage format? And why did you decide to use it?
Found footage was like, we didn't call it found footage. We, you know, it was, you know, we were just kind of like throwing out the ideas out, and we thought of like, you know, we're trying to go back to our childhood and like think about the movies that scared us. And there was this like, besides like Exorcist and The Shining and all those, there was like this little subgenre of movies where like they were basically like fake documentaries. And those were kind of the first kind of found footage movies, even though they weren't called found footage movies. But like a movie like, you know, The Legend of Boggy Creek, and then that show In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy, like to me that, you know, which is basically like a straight up documentary of, you know, of paranormal activity, you know, of UFOs and Sasquatch. And, you know, I love that show and it creeped me out, the music and Leonard Nimoy's voice. And so that was kind of our thing, is that like, okay, can we make a documentary about, you know, something crazy happening, some kind of mysterious thing, and play it off as a documentary and kind of get in under people's, you know, kind of get under the radar of people, or at least kind of get into their psyche and kind of like mess with them with the idea that they're actually watching something real, you know? Yeah. So the Blair Witch was supposed to be basically a documentary. It was going to have, you know, the footage, and it was going to have like people being interviewed about the footage and about, you know, Heather, Mike and Josh and all that, the police and all that stuff. And, you know, and it didn't, you know, we eventually kind of pulled all the documentary stuff out and just went with the footage, you know, with the found footage. But so basically the idea for Blair Witch was very similar to a movie called Cannibal Holocaust, which was kind of like a found footage movie before Blair Witch. It was like in the late 1970s. And luckily for us, Dan and I had never seen that movie. It was banned in the US, you know, for when you watch the movie, it's obvious why it was banned, but you know, it was not a fun movie, but it was a pretty much the exact story of Blair Witch. It was like, you know, these documentary crew goes into the, you know, the jungles of Peru to look for like, you know, a cannibal tribe, and you know, bad things happen, and then their footage, they disappear and their footage is found. And it's literally like, I don't know if you've seen it, but the movie is literally like these two people in front of a Steenbeck, like to watch of the, where you edit, we used to edit movies on and just watching the movie, you know, and then they come out, oh my God, they react and stuff. And that was kind of the prototype for Blair Witch. So, you know, I feel that like we were lucky we didn't see that movie, because I think that if we had seen that movie and we had come up with the idea for Blair Witch, we would have been like, well, that's done. That's been done, you know? So I felt, you know, both Dan and I were like kind of relieved when, you know, we're kind of shocked when we saw somebody sent us Cannibal Holocaust after Sundance, and we watched and we're like, this is the exact movie. So I think we kind of lucked out with that. But I mean, I think, you know, found footage for us was like, you know, I mean, if you think about it, like Spinal Tap was kind of, you know, is a fake documentary. It's kind of like, it's not found footage, but it is that same thing, you know, where it's basically you're just, you know, pretending that it's a real documentary with real characters. Now, obviously it's a completely different, you know, situation with comedy and casting. You know, obviously you know those people are not really musicians or whatever, because you've seen them in other things. But, you know, we definitely, you know, I think that Spinal Tap was really influential, because it like really kind of opened up that idea of like a fake doc, even though it was a comedy. I think that probably inspired a lot of, you know, more of Blair Witch than, you know, than almost anything else. But, and again, like, remember the Patterson-Gimlin film of, you know, Bigfoot walking across the dry creek bed, and, you know, the famous, you know, shot of the, you know, the supposed real Bigfoot. Like, to me, that's like the first real found footage, you know, movie, you know, or piece of media or whatever. Like, it's literally found footage. It's like somebody shot this in the woods, you know, and that's the kind of moment that we wanted to like strive for when we were doing Blair Witch, like that kind of raw, like, what the hell is that? And obviously we couldn't afford, you know, like a really expensive, you know, outfit for, you know, the Blair Witch or anything, because we didn't have any money. But, you know, and we had to do with, you know, with just basically, you know, the audience using their imagination. But that kind of like real thing was something that we would always think about trying to do. And obviously we didn't have the budget to like to do it, but that was kind of the moment of that for both Dan and I was as kids. We were just like, you're like, oh my God, I'm watching a shot of Bigfoot. Like, that's Bigfoot. You know what I mean? And we love that, you know, we love the idea that, you know, you couldn't tell and looks real, but can't be real. Looks like a guy in a suit, but does it look like a guy in a suit? And why, you know, and I love all that speculation and stuff. So that's kind of what we want to do with Blair Witch. And like, I always tell people, like, if we had like a real budget on Blair Witch, we would have done some crazy costumed witch creature at the end, and we would have ruined the whole movie. But that you know, because that really that footage of Bigfoot kind of walking across, that's really what inspired us, I think, the most, and kind of pushed us down the Blair Witch Road.
Oh wow, yeah, I think it was so much scarier just not seeing it, because our imaginations are always so much worse than anything
yes,
that can be put
yeah,
on screen.
Yeah, that was fortunate for us, you know, and that was also like, you know, inspired by, like, you know, when you go camping and you wake up, you know, to like noises outside the tent, and it's, you know, it's a raccoon or it's a squirrel or something, and it sounds like a bear, you know, and those moments, like, I remember my friend Pete and I were like, we were sleeping in a tent together. It was freezing and middle of nowhere, and you know, we heard something, and we were just like kind of laying there with our heads like up for like an hour, like just heads like just up, like, you know, like just still. And you know, that kind of fear was really also like a big inspiration for Blair Witch.
Yeah, I can imagine. I don't camp because I would not sleep at all. So nothing happens in the woods.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's fun, but definitely got to get used to it, you know?
Yeah. So for people who haven't read the book 8 Days in the Woods, can you tell everyone an abbreviated timeline for coming up with the idea for the Blair Witch all the way through filming it, and also give like a little bit of what it was like to film in the woods for 8 days?
Yeah, it was like, you know, we wrote this script, and it was like a script without any dialogue, because we knew that, you know, this had to look like real footage. This had to look like something that, you know, these filmmakers had shot and then disappeared, and then somebody found, you know, years later. So, you know, we wanted it to be raw. We wouldn't, you know, we didn't want it to be look too professional. It was kind of behind the scenes footage anyway. So we kind of, you know, just pushed that. And so we basically, you know, found these actors, and we had a really unique audition process. It was all like improv. There was no monologues to learn. It was just basically you'd come in and we would throw scenarios at you just to try to see, you know, kind of how quick people could think on their feet. So once we had the three actors, we brought them down to Maryland. They were all in New York, and they took the Greyhound down because, you know, it was that kind of budget. And we gave them like a little mini film school, because we, you know, we knew that they were going to, you know, the whole plan was that these actors are going to shoot the movie because they are the filmmakers. So we wanted this like extra realism, you know, we wanted this kind of just like a very realistic kind of tone to the show, and we knew to the footage, and we knew that the only way to do that was to let the actors, you know, be out there, be feel like they were lost, and kind of, you know, just somehow figure out how to, you know, give them the right batteries and the footage, you know, like tapes and film and everything. So we came up with a system of like how to keep them in the woods for, you know, the entire time for 8 days, and let them sleep in the woods, and, you know, kind of get tired and get, you know, cranky and fight with each other. And, you know, we were going to like start feeding them less as, you know, the days went on, because they're running out of food. So, you know, we definitely wanted, we built this kind of like play, like a 24-hour like play around the actors. And we would basically play the Blair Witch. We would go out there in the middle of the night and make noises and this and that. And then we directed them. We tried not to like have any, we tried to minimize the contact with them as much as we could. So we gave them like these little directing notes that they each read. They weren't allowed to like show each other their directing notes. And we would give them these directing notes like 3 or 4 times a day, and, you know, play them against each other, and, you know, kind of basically direct them through these little notes saying, oh, this guy's pissing you off, or you know where you're going, and just kind of like, you know, just little moments and character beats, and also logistical information about like, okay, you know, because they had a GPS unit, so they would like basically go from one waypoint to the next in the woods that we had pre-programmed. So the notes also contained like, hey, you need to be in waypoint 4 by this time. And, you know, at like the stick man forest, the note was like, go to this, you know, waypoint, and then look up in the, you know, look up in the sky, look up, you know. And then they looked up and they found, you know, the stick man. So it gave them like enough direction to like know what they were doing, but we never like revealed what they were going to go out there to see. So all the reactions of the stick men is like the first time they'd seen that. And the same thing at the end when, you know, they go into the house, they had never seen that house. So basically they stayed out there, you know, 8 days, and they, you know, we took Josh out, and then it was just Heather and Mike, and we moved them to the whole, most of the movie was shot in Seneca Creek State Park, but for the end, for the house, we had to move them to this park called Patapsco, which was about, you know, an hour away. So we drove Mike and Heather, and I told Ben Rock, who was the production designer, and kind of, you know, doing, we, you know, he did everybody did everything, you know, but he drove them out there, and I told him, don't talk, you know, try not to talk to them. Like, just put them in the back seat and don't talk to them. So we delivered them to like the area near the house. And that's when Heather did her confessional. You know, the note was like, you know, you're not going to get out of here. You've doomed your friends. You've doomed you. Like, what, you know, what are you going to say to you? What would you say to your parents? What would you say to Mike's family? And just point the camera at yourself and shoot that. And then she went out and, you know, shot that amazing footage. And then we, you know, so we finished the movie and started editing it, and we built a website to try to promote it. And we did get a lot of traffic because of the website, a lot of fans got a lot of interest. And this is, you know, 1998, where the internet was just, you know, a fraction of what it is now, but before YouTube, before, you know, Facebook, before any of that stuff. And so we had this little site, and people from all over the world came to see it as we were editing the movie. So we had no money, so it kind of motivated us to just keep going. And we were like, man, these people really love this idea. And we basically just treated on the website as a real thing. Like, this is a real footage, and these are, you know, filmmakers that were lost. They were students. And, you know, the internet was just big enough to, like, you know, you could look up and say, oh yeah, there was, you know, there is a college called Montgomery College in Maryland. And yeah, that's where they went. And there is a town called Burkittsville, but you couldn't find student records, or, you know, there was, yeah, you know, there's no Facebook profiles to hide or anything. There was nothing, you know, they were, everybody was kind of unknown. And then, so we edited the movie and we entered Sundance. You know, the edit was a whole crazy thing where it went from like a straight out documentary to just the footage, you know, that was a whole, like, 9 month long process. And we premiered at Sundance, and Sundance, we, you know, after their first show, we sold the movie, and, you know, and then the rest is history. You know, it was kind of like definitely catching lightning in a bottle. And we were just kind of amazed by what the reactions people were having. And I, you know, to this day, I still, you know, like the other day we had a screening in Burkittsville, which was, you know, the town that the movie takes place in. And this, you know, when the movie came out, Burkittsville was, you know, sieged by horror fans, and they stole the signs a couple times. And supposedly this is like, you know, off, you know, secondhand information. They vandalized, some people vandalized the cemetery. So we were like, you know, we were very unhappy about that. And we bought them a new sign, and that sign was stolen. So it was just, you know, so they kind of hated us in Burkittsville. And then just recently, like I said, 2 weeks ago, the mayor, we finally got like a Blair Witch friendly mayor who's like a big fan. And he was like, I'm going to have a screening of, you know, Blair Witch in Burkittsville. And it was a big success. We raised some money for the cemetery, and we're going to do it again next year for the 25th anniversary, hopefully. But, you know, it was kind of coming full circle, you know, almost 25 years later, coming back and showing the movie in one of the places, you know, the town that the movie supposedly took place in. And I, you know, I still can't, it was sold out. I still can't believe like the people that are still interested in this movie. And like, you know, it was like something that, you know, captured people's imaginations. I think also people, you know, saw that Dan and I were just normal guys, you know, schmucks from Florida, and, you know, we had no money. We didn't go to any great film schools or anything. And we made this movie, and it was in the theaters, and people were like, oh my God, you know, if these guys can do it, I can do it. And that really is like the best thing that happened, at least for me. Like, you know, I think for all of us, just like the end, like I never thought I would make a movie that would like inspire people, you know, the way, you know, Steven Spielberg and George Lucas's movies inspired me, and Spike Lee, and, you know, all these kind of early, especially, you know, on the indie side, you know, Robert Rodriguez and Kevin Smith. And Steven Soderbergh and, you know, Spike Lee kind of just, you know, making these movies for a very low budget and like just kind of rolling the dice. And, you know, it was really exciting for me. So I never thought that I would be, you know, on the other side of that and actually inspiring people. So, you know, it's, I feel like, you know, amazingly just blessed to have been a part of it, you know, because it was truly collaborative. Like they're really like the one person could not have made this movie. It was collaboration between the actors and us and producers and, you know, even just the people that helped us make the film. It was, you know, it was something that just all the planets aligned and, you know, there was so much good luck, so much good fortune. And, you know, and again, like I feel so I'm talking to you because of, you know, Blair Witch, because of this, you know, dumb movie. And I just feel like, you know, again, like I'm so lucky that I was a part of it. You know, and you know, it's so a lot of people ask me, like, don't you get tired of talking about Blair Witch? And I'm like, I mean, look, if you want to talk to me about Blair Witch, how could I be tired to talk to you about Blair Witch? You know what I'm saying? Like, so like, as long as people are interested, you know, I feel like, you know, there's no reason to be bitter or angry or anything, whatever. It's just like people are interested in the movie. Like, why wouldn't you talk about it? So again, like I love being a part of it, and it's changed it. You know, it made me a filmmaker. Gave me the ability to buy a house and get married and have kids and start my life. And it still pays the bills, you know? And so, you know, it was just this amazing thing that came into my life. And luckily we stumbled our way through it, but we made good decisions and, you know, and the rest was just, you know, luck.
That's amazing. You guys got so lucky with finding these three actors because they were so good and like their improv skills were great. And then I remember the website in 1998 or 1999. I was reloading it like multiple times a day. I was obsessed. And yeah, the Burkittsville screening is where we got to meet. And I have my stick man that we made out in the woods.
Nice, right there. Nice.
It didn't bring home any bugs. Thank goodness.
Yeah, the bugs were crazy that day.
Oh my God, those little
the
bees.
Sweat bees or whatever.
I asked people on Twitter if they had any questions, and our mutual friend Michael, the mayor, he was like, ask him what he thinks of sweat bees. I was like, no, I will not. They're annoying.
Yeah, I told Michael, I'm like, hey man, let's do it again next year, but let's not invite the sweat bees because they just ruined the party. But yeah, even with the sweat bees, it was a lot of fun. So I'm glad we got to do it.
So one of the questions that I got was, do you ever think that Blair Witch 2 will get the love it deserves? But I know how you feel about that movie already. So alternatively, do you ever think there will be another Blair Witch movie after the 2016 reboot, requel, whatever you want to call that?
Yeah. I mean, I don't hate, you know, Book of Shadows, but I feel that like, it was a weird time in our lives where like there was so many things coming at us and we had a little bit of money and I feel like for the first time in my life, I was like distracted from filmmaking because ever since I was 16, I was like, that was just all I did, you know, like all my character was based on being a filmmaker, like my, you know, everything I did was about being a filmmaker. And then once Blair Witch came out and we made a little money, now it became, you know, I was like, hey, I can actually spend some time and with my family and maybe, you know, buy a little house and whatever, and kind of do normal things, get married and maybe have some kids or whatever. And I feel that like during that time, that's when all the Book of Shadows stuff was coming out, you know, like they wanted us to do a sequel, but we didn't want to do a sequel. We wanted to do a prequel. And then they were like, well, okay, we'll do your prequel. And then we said, well, but we want to wait because, you know, the big problem with Book of Shadows was that they decided on the release date even before they had an idea for the movie. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's always leads to difficulties. You know, we've all heard the stories of just, you know, that you have a release date and you don't even have a movie yet. So you're going backwards. Like, that's not the way you should make movies, you know, especially for us. It was like, we've never made a movie like that, so I don't know how we could do it. So we kind of said, you know, you guys go and do your sequel if you want, and, you know, we'll be here on the sidelines or whatever. So, you know, it was weird, like, seeing your idea kind of taken over by somebody else, and even though we trusted Joe Berlinger, the director, and it was still a weird time, but so you know, the movie comes out and it just seems like, you know, it's not, you know, it's almost, it takes place in a different world than our movie, you know, like in the Book of Shadows world, the Blair Witch Project was actually a movie, you know, like, so it doesn't take place in the same world as, you know, the movie does. So it was, for us, it was always a weird, you know, like, and I understand Joe was trying to do something, you know, like, you know, something different to take it, to get us from, you know, to kind of check out the, to see it from a different direction, from a different point of view. And I thought that was really cool, but I just feel like he didn't have the tools. He didn't have the time. And also I don't, you know, and by the tools, I mean, I don't think he had like a studio that was really interested in like experimenting, or they just wanted to like, we need a sequel for next year so that we can make more money. And, you know, it was like that kind of thing. And I think all of us kind of like got, you know, swept up in it. And, you know, and again, it was like, to me, like Blair Witch 2 is like a cousin of Blair Witch Project. And then this, you know, the 2016 movie is, I think, is a direct sequel, even though it is, it does have a little, it has like that reboot feeling. And that's the only thing that I was kind of, that I was disappointed with. And I, you know, it wasn't, I think it was something that was just like the studio's, you know, idea. And then they hired, you know, Simon and Adam. And I just wish that they had that getting to the house would have been like the beginning of the third act. And then there was something else after the house. You know what I mean? Like I didn't feel like it was, I thought it was a little too close to like our film. And I thought it's kind of a wasted opportunity. You know what I mean? But, you know, again, not a fun film. You know what I mean? Like pretty harrowing and like just uncomfortable. And, you know, I think they did a great job with that. And I like all the kind of the new things, the new wrinkles to like what happens out in the woods. And, you know, I like that you kind of saw a little bit of the, you know, whatever it was, the Blair Witch or whatever it was, you know, the creature thing out there, you know, so, you know, I thought it was rather, you know, it was really well done. You know, it was kind of like a nightmare found footage movie, you know, and, you know, I'm sure they're going to make another movie someday. I mean, I think they've been, it's still a popular brand. You know what I mean? Like, I think that people still recognize Blair Witch has a high recognizability. And I think they've already been trying to develop some stuff. And honestly, like if a new Blair Witch movie is announced tomorrow, you know, I wouldn't be surprised, you know? So, you know, it's going to happen. I always thought that like a TV show is a smarter idea right now, because like, it has, I don't know, like TV, there's a little more patience for television than movies. Like movies, like it's just a one-off. And if you don't hit it, you know, you miss. And I think TV, you know, even if people get a little more patient, and if maybe you don't hit it the first couple episodes, maybe you get into it, you know, you hit your groove in the third episode. It's just a little more forgiving. And I think for the Blair Witch stuff, I think, especially for the fans, who like just want to dive deep into the mythology and like really kind of have their, you know, different points of view seen, like they want to see, you know, like, you know, what's actually happening, or they just want to explore the woods more. I think a TV show would have lent, you know, it's just more time to kind of do those kinds of, you know, cool things. So, you know, hopefully, you know, somebody makes a TV show. We've been involved with a couple of different ideas with them about, you know, maybe going out and doing it, but it just hasn't worked out. But yeah, I mean, I think there's still a lot of world to explore, I feel, in the Blair Witch universe. And I love all these other things that have come out, you know, the video game that came out a few years ago, and the Hunt a Killer box, which I thought was like really well done. And you know, there's like an escape room in Vegas that I haven't been to, but you know, next time I'm in Vegas, I'd love to check it out. So I love that like there's still people like creating things and, you know, expanding the world. But you know, it'd be nice to go and back and play in that, you know, in that sandbox again.
Yeah. Well, next year is the 25th anniversary. Can you share anything that's in the works for the 25th anniversary at this time?
I mean, you know, there is something in the works, but it's like, I'm not sure. It's something that's happening in the UK. There's a special edition being produced that we're part of. and I really can't say anything more than that, but it's going to be a cool package. We're going to try to put as much like footage on there that's never been seen before. We are actually going to show the film in a way that it hasn't been seen ever, really, like a format that it hasn't been seen in. Like, it was in the Blair Witch was shot on video and film, but everything was transferred to video. So even the stuff we shot on film was transferred to video. We edited that the movie, so it was all video and film, and then that videotape was transferred to 35 millimeter negative so that it could be projected at Sundance the first time that happened. So when you process video and turn it into film, it just has a different look. And that's why the Blair Witch like doesn't look like video, doesn't look like film. It just has like this weird feeling, which I thought was, you know, cool and effective, but the movie's never been seen in the original video format that it was shot in. So they're going to go back and pull all the original footage from the master tapes. So for the first time ever, you'll actually be able to see the Blair Witch the way it was first screened. Even this would be before Sundance. Like, even Sundance was, you know, is the transfer. Like, this was the only people that have seen the movie this way are the people that you know, the test screenings that we did in Orlando very early on was this format. And it's cool, you know, it's like something that we've been wanting to do for a long time, and we think, you know, it gives it a little bit of a different feel, you know. So I think it'll be cool for the fans to kind of experience it that way, because there, you know, there is going to be a big difference in the way it looks. But and we're trying to add as much stuff to it as possible. And there's a, you know, possibly a making of documentary, and trying to get as much stuff for the 25th anniversary as possible. But again, it's like, we aren't, you know, they're not like unfriendly to us, but they're not like very forthcoming with the information. And I think it's just because, you know, they're a big company, and also like, they don't have to run anything by us, so why would they? So that's why I said, you know, if there's something in development about Blair Witch, I'd be the last person to know about it. But, you know, I think that they're hopefully going to do something cool, and it'll be, you know, out. I don't even know when it's going to be out. I guess next year, you know, in July, or I don't know if they're going to wait till Halloween or what, but it's cool. We got some cool people. We got a cool partners and that are doing some stuff for the Blu-ray or whatever it's going to be. And so it's cool. And that's, you know, I've already kind of said too much. I'm sure there's going to be some kind of, you know, some kind of announcement soon, but you know, it's going to be cool. We're trying to do as much cool stuff as possible with it.
Oh, that sounds amazing. I know we're running short on time. I just have two more questions. I normally ask people if they've ever had any noteworthy experiences seeing a horror movie in theaters. And a lot of people reference the first time they saw The Blair Witch Project. So I want to ask you, what was it like to watch The Blair Witch Project with a live audience for the first time?
It was, I mean, it's nerve-wracking, you know what I mean? Like, again, like the first time we showed the movie in public was like a 2.5 hour version that we were just testing. And that's kind of what I was talking about before, is that it was basically projected on video. So it was like the real format of the movie. And, you know, it's like when you screen your movie, you know, it's always like a, you know, at least for me, it's always like a harrowing experience. And we were especially nervous about this one because we had no idea what we had. You know, we knew we had something cool, but we were like, are people going to sit through this? Like, there's never been a movie like this where it's just a bunch of raw footage, you know, like basically behind the scenes footage. There was always this kind of like documentary aspect to it, which is something that we were ingrained to, you know, we were like, that was the plan. It was ingrained in our heads that we had to have documentary. We had to have people explaining what, you know, what the movie was about, what, like, you know, the investigation and, you know, and so that's the first time I sat through it. But I don't even know. I don't think I sat through the whole thing because I had just been editing for so long that the last thing I want to do was sit there and watch this movie. But I saw it in other times. And again, it was like, there is a weird thing with Blair Witch where like it's just a lot of silence, you know, and a lot of it is like, you're like, you know, are people completely bored, or do they just, they're just, are they shocked, or what is it? So it was weird, because it's not, especially like the last act, you know, there's, it's not like a, oh, like a action and hurrah. And, or, you know, or there's nothing like, oh my God, they're being chased. And there's, you know, it's just like this slow kind of, you know, descent into hell. And it was really interesting, especially the reactions afterwards. Like when the credits went up, it was just like a lot of people would just sit there. So that was fun, you know, but, and it's like, you know, I always say, like, I would have think I would have had a, you know, I would have loved to seen the Blair Witch, like, you know, after not, you know, having being like a completely fresh perspective on it, like, you know, not being one of the filmmakers. I thought, I think that it would have been another movie that just scared the crap out of me, I feel, because even I, like, as one of the filmmakers, was like kind of freaked out by the footage sometimes, like especially that scene at the end, you know, like I was editing one night and I was just editing the house, and all of a sudden I started hearing things and like turned off the machine and got the hell out of there. So there was like, and that was kind of those moments where you're like, man, even, you know, I'm one of the filmmakers, like I was there when we were shooting this. If this thing is still is messing with me, then I, you know, it's definitely going to mess with other people. So yeah, it was a weird, you know, it's not like the typical experience you see in, you know, in movie theaters. Like there isn't, there's a very, the quietness, I think, is what surprised me about it, was like just the silence, you know?
Yeah, I think I remember there was silence after my screening of it. So nobody knew what to do. So
yeah,
so many people still thought it was real, or they weren't sure. So they're like, yeah, and you're clap and for
also,
this?
Yeah, exactly. And also sometimes, and people, obviously some people were like, what the hell is this? What they called this a movie, you know?
So your newest feature film is an anthology called Satanic Hispanics. Bloody Disgusting had reported in February that it was getting a theatrical release in around 800 theaters in September. Is that still the plan?
That is still the plan. It's coming out in September 14th, and it's a fun, crazy, it's a crazy ride. It pulls no punches. It is, if there's anything that is going to insult you, it's going to find a way to insult you. It's like really raw, and it's just, but it's fun. I really love this anthology because it does have a lot of different, you know, flavors. There's like comedy, there's straight comedy, there's action comedy, there's, you know, psychological, you know, horror, there's creature effects, there's, you know, shooting, and you know, there's a lot of great stuff, and there's great cameos, and we shot it for like almost nothing, and we got these really great people to come out and act in it. And mine is like a straight comedy starring Hemke Madera and Patricia Velasquez, and it was like, you know, just a crazy experience doing it. It's the first time I've done something like in a while, you know. I've been mostly mostly in television, and it was a weird ride making this movie, but you know, I'm with the other filmmakers, there's four other filmmakers and just very talented people, and just trying to keep up with them was the big thing for me. I'm like, all right, I just don't want to be the only one with a, you know, crappy film, or, you know, it's always the fear, and you know, you never know, but I think all the movies are pretty damn good. And again, different flavors. And I think that, you know, if you go in there with an open mind, I think you're going to have a good time.
Amazing. I'm assuming one of the 800 theaters might be in New York City. So
yes, no, there's okay. Definitely going to be, yeah, there's definitely going to be some, there's definitely New York. There's a link somewhere all over my Twitter or whatever it's called. I put it up almost every day to get pre-sales or whatever, but it's, yeah, it's a fun movie, and hopefully it does a little business and people enjoy it.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait to see it. So my last question that I always ask everyone is, mm-hmm. if you had to spend quarantine with one horror villain, who would it be?
Jeez. I mean, I've always, you know, like, I guess I love Freddy, you know what I mean? Like, he's such a weird dude, and I love the performance. He's like, you know, obviously like one of the most kind of fun, serial killers or whatever, always cracking jokes and whatever. And also, with him, it's like, as long as you don't fall asleep, you're good, so there is at least a way that you can, fight him. But I mean, I wouldn't want to be stuck with any horror villain during quarantine. I mean, that wouldn't be a good time, but I always thought, but Freddy was like, it was always fun and sadistically entertaining. I think a lot of the others would be just kind of boring because they wouldn't, a lot of them don't really say anything. But yeah, I think Freddy would be a good one.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time, for being here. Do you want to tell everyone where they can find you and your movies and Satanic Hispanics before we go?
Yeah, I mean, I'm on Sanchez on the Mic on Twitter, X, whatever it's called, and Instagram, I guess, right? And then there's a page called Hacks and Films, HAXAN on Facebook, Hacks and Films, that I put all the kind of the Satanic, just basically all the production stuff that I've been working on and stuff. And then, yeah, just look up Satanic Hispanics and you'll find some link to get tickets and, check it out. And hopefully people will dig it. It's a lot of fun.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Thank you so much again for your time.
Sure. Thank you.
That's it for this week's episode of Who's There. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Eduardo Sanchez. And thanks again to Eduardo for coming on. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Who's There PC. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, horror movie recommendations, or you'd like to be a guest, shoot us an email at whostherepc@gmail.com. Until next time, stay scary and never ask who's there.